Hey everyone, welcome to the Delta Flyers with Tom and Harry as we journey through episodes of Star Trek Voyager. Your two hosts along this journey are my fellow Trek actor and accomplished television director, Mr. Robert Duncan McNeil, and myself, your favorite Eternal Ensign, Garrett Wong. Remember, you can get the full version of this podcast by signing up to become a patron at patreon.com/ The Delta Flyers, Robbie McNeil.
Oh, hello.
Whoa.
There.
Hey.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. How was your hike this morning?
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I had a good hike, saw a buck, we saw a deer,
nice.
Deer with big horns on him.
Yes, yes.
He was just all by himself, having a little breakfast. It was nice.
Yeah. Did he run or did he stay?
Oh, no, good. He sort of looked at us. We were probably 50 feet away, pretty close. Yeah.
I love that.
I love it.
Oh, it's so nice. Okay. Yeah.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm in Calgary. It's definitely, you know, getting to be summer now. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
So
it was
raining quite a bit, and you know, people were complaining about how crummy the weather has been, but now the rain has stopped, so it's all good right now.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. I am wearing my Yes Ma'am t-shirt right
yes,
now.
Yes, you are. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am.
I love the sort of design of the
the
command sort of uniform, yes. Sort of very graphic. It's kind of cool. Yes,
yeah,
ma'am.
It's sort of a representation of it, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, as long as you suggest a suggestion of it, is it's enough.
It's,
you know?
Art. It's kind of like our poetry synopsis. It is. We're a creative little podcast.
We sure are.
Gang here. We like to be creative. So
yes, we do.
Cool. What are we watching today?
We're watching an episode called Barge of the Dead.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
You should know something about this, hopefully.
A little bit.
See. Okay.
We'll see.
All right. Well, let's go watch this episode. Everyone, we will be right back after we watch this episode, Barge of the Dead, and we will give you our recap and discussion of the ep. We'll see you soon.
See you, everybody.
Hey, everybody. We're back from watching Barge of the Dead.
Yes, we are.
Yes. Okay.
What an emotional journey. What an emotional journey.
Very emotional. Also, gave me some goosebumps in some of the scenes. I was like, ooh, it's a little, you know, a little intense. So, all right.
Yeah.
Let's start off with our poetry synopsis of this episode.
Yes.
Okay. And here is my haiku for Barge of the Dead.
Okay.
Klingon metal found. Torres heads for Klingon hell. Makes peace with mother.
Oh, that's nice. You got it all in there.
I got it all in there. I squeeze it all in.
All right. Here is my artistic, creative, and slightly charming limerick for Barge of the Dead. In a shuttle, B'Elanna hit her head, and she woke up on the Barge of the Dead. Her boyfriend was Tom, but she had to save Mom. She survived and hugged Janeway instead.
I love it. It's really to the point. I love it.
Thank you.
I love it.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
good
you
job.
Much. Yes.
Talk to me about these guest stars and
let's
their
talk
first
about
jobs.
The guest stars. Okay. Eric Pierpoint plays Kortar.
Kortar, yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. His very first job, 1984, a movie called Windy City.
What?
Don't really know much about it, but that's Windy City.
Probably like about Chicago.
Maybe news, a news thing. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sherman Augustus plays Hijkwa. Whatever that is. That's Sherman Augustus.
Yes, that is the older Klingon that Torres is sitting down with.
First time that she meets on the sitting on the ground.
Yes.
His first job was the movie Colors in 1988. Now, Colors, wow. I think Sean Penn directed that movie. It was about like gangs, like LA yes. gangs, I think, or something.
And that is actually the first film that Aaron Eisenberg worked on as really? A background actor, basically. Oh, a featured funny. Background is what it was. So
Colors. That's Sherman Augustus. Okay. Karen Austin, who plays Morale.
Yeah.
Which is, I'd forgotten, that's where we got Tom and B'Elanna got their daughter's name from. Is
Oh, Morale. You named it after mom.
Yes. Oh, I had, I'm sure I knew that, but I'd forgotten that connection. So,
okay.
Anyway, Karen Austin, who plays her mom, her first job that I could find is Happy Days in 1978.
Oh,
must have been a baby.
Yeah, she must have been one of those teeny boppers there at the diner. Yeah,
at the diner on Happy Days. And great. Karen Austin, I have to mention this. Karen Austin, before this, Karen was in my first short film, The Battery, that Joshua Jackson was in.
Oh.
And Karen, yeah, Karen played the mom in that short film. And I had forgotten that she played B'Elanna's mother.
Was that an open casting or was that some, you knew her and you invited her to play the role? Do you recall how that?
I can't remember how I got connected with Karen.
Okay.
I really don't. I think it was through words of mouth and hey, I need, do you know anybody that would be good for this? Talking to friends and, you know, I didn't have a casting director.
Okay. So she played Josh Jackson's mom.
She did. Karen, Karen Austin. So that's nice. Cool.
Yeah. Small world. Very small
very world. Small world. Yep. The last actor that I looked up here is John Kenton Scholl. He played Brookton.
Ah.
And his first job was Fantasy Island in 1981.
Look at Fantasy Island, Happy Days. Look at these
classics.
These are classic gems of television here.
Yes.
Goodness gracious. Okay. Very excellent. Cool. We were incorrect about our little guess about who the director is.
Totally wrong.
Yeah, Mike Vahar, someone that we respect and
love. Mike,
love.
I always loved Mike. Yeah. Teleplay was Brian Fuller.
Mm-hmm.
It came from a story by Ron Moore and Brian Fuller together.
So. Good old Ron. Here he is. He's fresh into the Voyager writing room, and he's already knocking it out of the park a couple times here. Right. So this is his second go. I like that. Excellent.
Okay. Well, let's talk about what happened. The first thing we see is B'Elanna in a shuttle.
Yeah.
And she's having some kind of emergency. It's a super rough ride. She does have her crimped hair still. So this is an ongoing season six commitment.
It really wasn't for your arch rival. This is a sort of just a seasonal thing.
Yeah.
For this season. Change for only.
I'm glad
six.
It wasn't just for her ex-boyfriend that she fancy pantsed her hair. Yeah, so she's having a rough ride, and things are exploding. And one thing I noticed is, you know, in the shuttles there wasn't glass in the windows, like it was just an open. And there was so much smoke, and I look behind her head, and I'm like, oh, I can see the smoke
exiting the window
where there's no glass. Like
also, isn't the pilot supposed to be on the other side of the shuttle? Typically?
No, usually it's on the right side.
Is it the right side?
Okay. Yeah.
So it's sort of like a British vehicle, a British car then.
Okay. Yes, exactly.
All right. Yeah, the shuttle was damaged and she encountered an ion storm. She's hailing Voyager. Her status report is that her deflector field is shot. She's venting plasma from her port nacelle. She's lost helm control. So Chakotay says, okay, no problem. Oh, we're going to modify a tractor pulse to slow you down. We have arresting fields are in place. Which reminds me of when a naval jet lands on an aircraft carrier, they have those little things that catch the plane and stop it, So, but we have that in terms of a containment field in the future. Janeway is off camera, tells her to hold on, and it's going to be bumpy. She does make it, and she lands and hits hard. And again, where are the seat belts? Where? I mean, we need some, okay? Clearly.
Yes.
Paris, you make a very quick entrance into this episode, and you're the
quick.
One...
Yeah. I'm kind of calm though.
You're weirdly calm. You're like, hey, you okay? I mean, you'd be a little bit more freaked out, I think.
I would think so. Yeah. So right off the bat, I'm like, something's a little
okay.
I don't know if that was intentional or if that's just how I'm interpreting it.
Yeah, but I didn't. It didn't really trigger. It didn't make me think anything. I thought, okay, well, Paris is a little bit more mellow. I didn't think anything, but she has a mild concussion. Not until later do I get a little bit of a clue as to, wait a minute, maybe we're not in reality. So we jump to, do you have any other comments about the shuttle crashing scene? No.
Nope.
Okay. We jump to the ready room, Janeway's ready room, and Janeway is sort of reprimanding Torres for not following orders.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, listen, I ordered you to return to Voyager, but instead you chase the probe into the center of an ion storm. And Torres is like, because it's the only probe that we have, the only multispatial probe. And I didn't want to lose it. And Janeway goes, you're the only B'Elanna that we have, and I don't want to lose you either. And then she also says, Lana, I'm glad you made it back in one piece. Torres stops and says, wait a minute, did you just call me Lana? And Janeway says, yes, I did, in fact. And B'Elanna says, well, that's what my mom used to call me.
Yeah.
So we have a little bit of tie there.
I was like, this is weird. Because it's a little weird. No one's ever called her Lana.
Correct.
No one.
Correct.
So it felt to me like, oh, we're making a point that Janeway is doing something for some unknown reason.
Right.
Either aliens are controlling this or it's not a reality. Mm-hmm. I right off the bat was feeling like, this is something's off here.
Okay. I still didn't know that yet. I'll tell you when I realize something's off,
okay.
But it's not yet. Do you have any other comments on this scene?
No. We go to B'Elanna's quarters next Chakotay enters. He says that they found something from her shuttle mission. And he says, my ancestors called this piece of metal a monkey wreck. And I paused that and I went back.
And you're like
three times. I'm like, why is he calling this rectangular piece of metal a monkey wrench? Like a monkey wrench is an actual name of a tool, but that's not it.
Correct.
It's not, you know, what he's holding is not a wrench.
Yeah.
It was just weird to me.
Well, I mean, I think he was referring to the fact that, you know, the monkey wrench metaphorically, the monkey wrench in the engine or thrown into the system. It short circuits it. It ends up making whatever it's thrown into malfunction. That's what I understood that as, right?
Okay.
But like then I started thinking, wait a minute, that's something that Tom Paris would talk about, you know, a monkey wrench, not Chakotay.
Yeah.
So had a little bit of a, I don't know what's going on, but evidently this piece of metal was lodged in the port nacelle of Torres' shuttle.
Yep.
He thinks that it happened when the deflector field collapsed. So that's why it was lodged in there. As he hands it to her, she looks at it and realizes there's a Klingon insignia on there. It's a Klingon symbol. And she's like, wait a minute, this is Klingon. And Chakotay says, well, it's a few hundred years old. And Torres says, well, the quick explanation is a Borg cube was in the Alpha Quadrant. They assimilated a bird of prey, took it back to the Delta Quadrant on their way. They blew it out of the airlock on the way home. And she sets it on her table. And Chakotay leaves. And as she goes to fill up her coffee at the replicator, she hears a noise. She turns around. The noise gets louder. The piece of metal turns into blood. And she hears
blood starts coming out of the symbol and going onto the table. And I love the shot as she set it down on the table, this cool shot that went like
underneath the table,
under the glass. It was cool.
I did like that. Mm-hmm. Good job, Mike Vahar.
Yeah.
And the noise gets louder. And all of a sudden we hear this cacophony of Klingon voices screaming and yelling. It's very confusing. And I'm thinking, what is going on? I thought that piece of metal was possessed. Like it was haunted, you know, like it was an evil artifact.
But then all of a sudden it goes silent in the room and the blood vanishes.
It's metal
and it's like,
again.
Wait, was this a vision? You know, like a, is her concussion? Is that what's going on?
That's what I thought. It must be concussion based. We then jump to engineering. And I like this scene because is one of the most relaxed Harry scenes I've ever seen.
I know.
Very relaxed. And you can see Harry is not excited. He has been running endless scans on this piece of metal. And B'Elanna wants to get to the bottom of what she saw and what she heard. Harry says, look, maybe it's the comm system. The comm system picked up some strange signal from a pulsar. Torres replies, a pulsar that speaks Klingon. Harry's pretty upset that it's 0300 hours. And Neelix interrupts. Neelix shows up He's there to congratulate Torres on her discovery. Yeah, look at you. You've discovered the Klingon artifact in the Delta Quadrant. This is amazing.
Like, yeah, that's I'm gonna throw for a party. Celebration. Yeah, I'm going to celebrate, mm-hmm. commemorate this Klingon artifact.
Right.
Torres is like, there's no point to that. You know, I made a note here. He's talking about how valuable this antiquity, this thing is. Yeah. And then he goes over and he starts rubbing it. And I'm like, dude, if that's like a... a super valuable thing. Don't touch it.
Like, he starts rubbing it.
But he's like caressing it and kind of looking at it, touching it. I'm like, don't touch the important stuff.
Okay.
But
I didn't notice that. But that's funny.
He does talk about some Klingon lore and like he's already started researching Klingon lore. He's quoting this stuff.
Yeah, because what Torres says is she goes, it was an accident. I didn't really find it. It was an accident. Yeah. It fell into the nacelle. And that's when he recites the whole, it was an accident when this one famous Klingon found this famous knife and he was looking for his dog, his Targ. So, yes.
Yeah, he's already, he knows more than we think. Again, another kind of suspicious. This like, are we in reality?
Really? You felt that there too? No.
I was like, how does he know so much? No. Everything seemed a little too convenient for me.
Okay.
But he does say, I've already replicated 5 barrels of blood wine.
Yeah. Don't want that to go to waste.
Exactly.
That's a lot of blood wine. Okay.
So he heads to the celebration. He says, and B'Elanna, you're going to have to make a speech.
Yeah.
So she's on the spot.
Yeah. And that this is Harry's exit, though. He's like, look, obviously we both need sleep. And so she lets him off the hook. Harry leaves.
We cut into Club Tuvok into Club Tuvok.
Yes.
And it looks like they're sort of in a meditating kind of scenario. There's the lamp or the candle going.
Right. And that's the last time that we saw Torres in Club Tuvok. She was doing a meditation exercise. Yeah. Right.
Little psychotherapy in there or something.
Yeah. Tuvok is talking about this artifact as the reason why it has brought these feelings of self-loathing to the surface, how she hates the fact that she's Klingon. And no matter how hard she tries to evade her Klingon side, it will always reassert itself. So he suggests, let's forego the meditation. Yeah. And let's try a different exercise. She agrees. She's like, yeah, I'm into it. So then he hands her a bat'leth and says, well, what do you think of this?
By the way, what is Tuvok doing with having the bat'leth hanging around in his, I happen to keep this for some exercises.
Yeah. Aerobics with a bat'leth. It's whatever. Very popular.
Well, clearly he's got the bat'leth because in a second he grabs the bat'leth and she says something like, that's a clumsy weapon. It's like everything Klingon. It's overstated.
Yes.
And then he starts to make some moves with it. And I was like, whoa, Tuvok's got game with this bat'leth.
He starts doing
it's almost like a whole routine, which, by the way, whenever we have bat'leth stuff, I don't know if you remember, but Dan Curry, our VisFX supervisor who designed this weapon.
He did.
Originally, Dan Curry would always come in to kind of coach and create the moves with the bat'leth. He would work with Dennis Matalone and the stunt guys.
That's right. And he coached me on that too, if you remember. Yeah, because I decided to do it in Germany at FedCon at the convention in Germany. I wanted to do some bat'leth moves on stage, but my version of it was I attached glow sticks all around the edge and turned off the lights. Right. And so I made this mess, this big deal with that. But yes, it does. It is amazing that Dan Curry created the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it was all him.
Okay. So Tuvok does his moves. And then his final move, he kind of swipes it by her face and he cuts her face.
Yes.
Okay, and then she's like, what are you doing? And he goes, a true Klingon would kill me where I stand. And he starts acting like a Klingon. And I was like, what is happening to Tuvok?
Yeah.
Is this where you finally
When he cut her face, I was like, what? No, and then when he says you're this exercise is over, dismissed, and take your dishonor with you. I knew he's not gonna talk like that to her, and he won't cut her either. So that's the point where I kind of felt like.
Yeah, okay, this was definitely a no-brainer at this point. But this is where I was like, I knew it. I knew we weren't in a real world.
Yeah. But yeah, it took until the Tuvok scene for me to realize something weird is going on.
This is not the real. This is not real life.
Right. Right.
Is this real life? No, it is not real life.
And you caught on to that three scenes ago. So good for you.
I kept seeing all these little things. I was like, this is not real. I know this is not, it's going to be a dream. It's going to be a holosimulation. I don't know.
We go to the mess hall.
Klingon party time. Mm-hmm. We go into this scene. The camera's following Paris and B'Elanna.
Yes.
But I made a note here. I wish we would have seen her face because I feel like the moment she steps into a Klingon celebration is going to have an impact on her. And I did miss that moment of like doors open, see what her eyes are seeing, you know, see her expression.
Right.
And then we could have gone inside. We didn't really get a sense of B'Elanna until like after the doctor sings.
Agreed.
Singing opera, and then Seven starts singing, and then finally...
Well, it's not opera. Let's be precise. It's a Klingon drinking song.
Drinking
is what
songs,
it is.
Yeah. Yes.
But Seven says she doesn't, you know, she fails to see the merit of learning a Klingon drinking song. But the doctor convinces her that this is worth her time. Yeah. And then she joins in, and she knows all the words to it. So it was a little confusing. Like, she's not into it, but then she's into it. Yeah. And you're right. To see Roxanne's reaction or Torres's reaction would have been better than following her POV.
I felt like I missed that moment. I felt like this whole, but again, at this point I knew something's up. We're not in the real world. Yeah, so if it feels weird and awkward, I guess there's a reason why.
Yeah, there's a reason. It still fits though. It's not bad.
I got to be honest, this whole scene in the mess hall felt really awkward to me.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
It was like, there wasn't crowd noise. It didn't feel like real life. It felt like a Twilight Zone weird, awkward thing.
I hear you.
It was odd looks between Torres and Tuvok.
Yeah.
And Paris sort of clocks that as well. Finally, we come back and we see them. Right. Janeway scoops up some blood wine for Harry. And I loved you just staring.
The reaction.
That was very funny.
Yeah. Neelix comes over to you and B'Elanna and offers you some gach. It's replicated gach, but it's still moving. So he does something to it to make it have a little movement.
Yes.
Which is interesting. Torres talks about how her mom would have loved all this effort put in by the crew for this party. And that when her mom divorced her dad, she took B'Elanna out of Federation school and put her in a Klingon monastery to teach her honor and discipline. So really try to force feed her this whole Klingon, you know, ritual and and heritage and culture. Mm-hmm. And she really fought against it big time.
Yep.
Janeway gets everyone's attention and starts giving a speech. But the minute she starts speaking, all of a sudden, we see
the sound sort of fades away.
Yes,
the lights turn
the lights
red.
Change, and it's And
there's a Klingon behind her.
Yep.
That she turns around and looks at, and then he runs out of frame, and she looks back the other way, and now there's another Klingon in the room, and suddenly these Klingons start to slaughter everybody. They stab.
Starts with the captain, right? And B'Elanna yells, "Captain!" And she watches the captain die. And then the Klingon kills the doctor and Seven, and then Chakotay, and then Kim. I'm glad that you threw me in the first in the beginning, but I'm actually next to last to die. You're the last one to die.
Did you see when I died, by the way? I was going after one of them and he got me and my hand just sort of like gently, as if I was thanking him, like, because he was running at me and I was being killed and going the opposite direction. And so I could not avoid touching him, but I sort of tried to. And because it's in slow motion, it looks very almost like a gentle sort of
a little caress.
Like it was weird.
Thank you for bat-lething me. I appreciate it. Like that. That is hilarious. And then the Klingon comes right at Torres and she's the last one to actually die.
Yeah. And we see them swing at her and then we cut to her close up on the ground.
Well, it was a good cut though. You like the segue? Because as the Bat'leth comes down on her, then you see her head fall down on the deck of the barge, basically. So I did like the transition between scenes.
Yeah, it was a nice transition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. She starts to wake up. She looks around. She asks where she is.
Yeah.
I forget which Klingon, whoever's there says.
A couple of Klingons.
It was the Vraska, right?
Yeah. And no, it's Brock Brockton is the one that has the what do you call it? The brand. So Brockton is given the brand. Two background Klingons grab her, and he tries to brand her cheek, but the brand doesn't take on her. He's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? So it's clearly something's happening. It's not her time. They release her after they can't brand her, and she falls to the deck, basically. Mm-hmm. She sits down in this one spot, and that's where we see the older Klingon. And again, she asks the same question, where am I? And he says to her, well, you should know, you're half Klingon. And she says, I don't know, enlighten me. And he's the one that says, we're on the Barge of the Dead. This is the ship that takes dishonored Klingons to Grethor. Mm-hmm. And in our intro, we talked about, we thought that this was the ship that took them to Stovakor, which is incorrect. This is the ship that takes them to hell, not to heaven. And she says
that's a myth.
Yeah, it's a myth.
Klingon Hell's just a story.
Yep.
And he said, yeah, I thought so too, but it's real.
It's like real.
You're here.
Surprise.
Yeah. And she goes, no. Yep. I was on a ship called Voyager.
Right.
And he says that was the Naj, or the dream before dying.
Right.
And then he says to her, when we can't accept dying, we create an illusion to hold on to.
An illusion of life to hold on to.
Yes, an illusion of life. So he's basically telling her that all of her time on Voyager was just an illusion, that she was dead.
And she points to Broktar and she says, that's the one that slaughtered my friends. And then the older Klingon says, no, he slaughtered the dream. He dragged you from the illusion of life. This is where you belong.
This is where you belong.
Yeah.
By the way, do you, I was looking at all this stuff on the ship. Well, you and I remember that there was this big boat set built.
Yeah,
we did remember that.
Yes, but it looks smaller than what I remember on screen.
Yeah, it did look a little smaller. Yeah. It was huge and it felt huge in real life.
It really did.
But it also was noisy. I don't know if you remember all the creaking and the rocking.
And
they had fans going. So I was thinking in this first sequence on the ship that they must have looped all of
this. Oh, everything was looped, clearly. They
had to loop everything because it was creaking and rocking and fans going and all kinds of noises. So,
but wouldn't you say it was a good looping job by
everybody? It was pretty good.
Yeah. I was actually impressed. It was a good job. Mm-hmm. There's an interruption in terms of voices now being heard. You're hearing Klingon voices. You're also hearing Chakotay, Janeway, and Tom. The older Klingon says, watch out. It's the Hoshari, which is it's sort of like a siren. You know, they're trying to lure you to your death, to an even worse death than the hell. And he says, don't listen. They're trying to get at you.
Yes, they're trying to lure you.
Yep.
And she goes over to the edge to look down.
And she's like, Tom?
Yeah. And then behind her, there's a Klingon standing up high, a stuntman, clearly.
He just jumps.
In the wide shot, he just sort of jumps out. It was so awkward. I don't know. I laughed out loud. It wasn't a moment of like, oh no. Like
it was some for me.
Guy.
Really? I was like, he got lured. God. He heard the voice of his loved ones and he wanted to go to them and he jumped into the water. And I was like, no. And you were laughing.
I did. I laughed at it. It was kind of funny to me.
Okay. All right.
So when he jumps overboard, we see the point of view. And this is all a VisiFX shot.
Yes.
I was trying to figure out how they did this because I don't think they put any Klingons or in a water tank. So they must have created all the water with VisiFX and just had a shot of him pretending to be in water or something.
I guess.
But it was
even thought that he was a VisiFX too. And I thought he was CGI.
He once might
in the
have
water.
Been.
I didn't think that was the real dude. So eaten by sea serpents. And then there is a cool shot though, because you see Roxanne looking out through that little porthole at the guy that just got eaten, and all of a sudden you hear someone behind her, and she and then the camera racks focus as she turns back, and now you see it's Brockton, and he's there to take her to Kortar, the guy who's basically piloting the ship. We do learn who this guy is. He is the first Klingon who destroyed the gods that made him. So he was condemned to ferry the souls of the dishonored to Grethor. So we have a little backstory here.
Yeah, she's introduced to him. But what's important here is he says, it's not your time.
Yeah.
There's been a mistake. You know, it's not your time, that you've been close to it several times.
Right.
It's not your time.
Yeah.
He also says, that she is the daughter of Meral, which is, that's when all of a sudden I was like, Meral, wait, that's our daughter's name. Like, that's Tom and B'Elanna's daughter. So, oh my God. Yeah. I put it all together.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Yeah. She also sees a Batleth there and she's kind of looking at it, thinking about it. And she grabs it and she comes in towards Kortar and he's kind of laughing at her like, you can't do anything to me with that. I'm already dead. And so he grabs it from her. And as he yanks it off of her, he ends up slicing her hand. So she cuts her hand open.
She's got an injury on her hand. Yeah. And she looks at it. There's a close-up of it.
Yeah. Before she can address that, that's when the sound happens. A lot of crazy noise starts happening. The storm is acting up. And that is that is signifying the arrival of another dishonored soul. And as this other Klingon materializes on the deck, we see that is her mother.
Her mother, Meral, Karen Austin.
Karen Austin is there.
Yeah. Yes. By the way, I wish that they could have come up with a better way to bring people onto the ship. It felt like they were transporting.
Oh.
Like if it was going to be sort of a spiritual thing, I don't know. I wish it had been like, wind and, you know, something a little more magical or organic. It didn't feel organic. It felt technological.
Okay.
That was my issue.
That's your critique. But it is a different effect than when we do beam into someplace, though.
It's a slightly different color or pattern, but it still felt technological.
Okay.
To me.
Yeah.
Whereas if it had been like, you know, a smoke monster coming in and spinning around like a tornado, something organic.
Yeah. No, point well taken.
That would have added to it for sure.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But yes, it's Karen Austin. There she is. Mm-hmm. And then I think this is where Torres regains consciousness suddenly. She sees her mother.
Yes.
And then she wakes up and she's in sick bay. And I love the low angle that they did in this scene. It just felt like a fresh and cool look to the sick bay at this point. But she wakes up. Paris explains to her what happened, that her shuttle was on the trailing edge of an ion storm and she lost life support. They had a tractor the shuttle in, that she was in a coma, that she almost died.
Yeah.
And then she says, what about the artifact? Where's the artifact? And Paris is like, what artifact? There's no artifact. artifact? And then she looks down and she sees the cut on her hand, just like in the dream, just like what happened with the Batleth on the ship. So she's like, and by the way, she has a cut on her hand and then the doctor comes over to heal it. And you see that cut on her hand in the shot. And then as he's talking to her, it goes below frame. And then when it comes back up, it's the cut is gone. And I was like, oh, that's cool. They did a little quick switch down below while he was talking.
So you think somebody was below camera frame and they wiped off the blood?
They wiped it off, cleaned it off, and then pulled her hand back up. And it was like,
whose job would that have been, Robbie, to wipe off that blood? Who do you think would have done that?
Would it had to be somebody in the makeup department. Scott Wheeler, maybe?
Okay.
One of those special effects makeup people.
Yep. One of the people who did makeup. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm blanking on who her primary guy was. It wasn't Scott. Oh my gosh. The guy with the baseball cap and the beard.
And the beard. Yeah. I can't think of his name right now.
We're blanking. Okay. Anyway. Keep moving on.
Okay. So next we go to B'Elanna's quarters and she's reading on a pad and there's ding dong. Chakotay comes in. You know, he's heard about what happened. He says, hey, you want to talk? She goes, no, not really. And then so he's like, okay. And he starts to leave and she goes, you know, you'll think that I'm crazy. And he stops. So she really does want to talk.
She does.
And she basically says to Chakotay that she thinks she died and she was on the barge of the dead. And she said, I think my mother was there.
Yeah.
And she says, what if it's real? His response is like, well, think of it like a metaphor or symbols, you know, mm-hmm. like he talks about his grandfather. He says, my grandfather used to imagine that he had transformed into a wolf. Mm-hmm. And it was very real for him. He didn't grow gray hair out of his body, but the metaphor, the feeling, the experience was very real. And then she does say that, you know, well, her mother has been on her mind a lot. And she realizes that, you know, she's realized recently that it's been 10 years since she's spoken to her mother. So she's definitely having some guilt, some pangs of, you know, that fractured connection. And so it makes sense if her mother's been on her mind and she's had this kind of guilt about that, that maybe it was a dream. And So then we go to engineering.
Mm-hmm.
And Paris walks in and she's reading, she says, the Pogbati. How do you say it?
I think it's the Pogbatla, but you can say the
Batla
booty if you want, whatever you end up saying.
Bati.
It's almost, yeah, it's in, okay, it's in Hindi now. Yes.
She's reading the Pogbatla.
Yeah.
Batla. Okay. Batla. Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. So she's reading the
The potluck dinner is what she's reading.
Yes. She's reading that Klingon thing.
That sacred Klingon scroll. Let's just say that.
Thing. And Paris says, what are you reading? She's like, you don't want to know.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, no. What did you find out? Come on. Yeah. Tell me about it.
Yeah.
She says, well, this thing is explaining why her mother is being sent to Grethor. Mm. It's because of Torres.
Yes.
It's her dishonor. And her mother is being punished.
Yeah, the sins of the child. Mother's paying the price. Because she turned her back on everything Klingon. Now her mom has to go to hell.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness.
She says that in the 11th tome of Klavik, he returned bearing a wound. He returned from this vision bearing a wound that he received there. And she had the wound. So that hand thing comes back. That's part of the evidence for her that this is real.
Right.
That happened to her. And Tom's like, yeah, he's very skeptical.
Yeah.
And she says, I want to go back. I want to save my mother from hell, basically. I've got to go back and fix this.
That's right.
So then we cut to the ready room and
briefing room, actually. Yeah.
Oh, is it the briefing room?
Yeah. It's weird that they have this whole conversation in the briefing room. It's just Janeway and Torres. So,
well, she says she wants to return under the doctor's control and to recreate the circumstances of the ion storm so she can go back and save her mother.
Yeah.
She wants to make this right.
Yeah.
And Janeway's like, no, absolutely not. And
she says no, because she's requesting to simulate a near-death experience. Yeah, basically almost kill me. And that's how I'm going to get back and save my mom. So,
And Janeway's like, no. And then I was shocked when B'Elanna goes, you can't prevent me from practicing my beliefs.
Yes.
I was like, wait a minute. When did B'Elanna has been rejecting, like, not even for a moment has she said this. Like, she's going to try to play that card? I don't think so.
And you know, but then she sort of says, look, I've had my chance to prove to you, you know, my worth. And then you've been proud of me. And Janeway's like, yes, I have. And I want my mother to see what I've become so that she can be proud of me, so that she, because at this point, my mother only thinks of me and thinks of how disgraced she is. Mm-hmm. This is the only thing my mother thinks about. So I need to change that. And that convinces Janeway basically to do this. Right.
Yeah. We go to sick bay and Paris walks into the shot. He's wound up.
You are passionate.
Like, one minute you're in a coma and the next you're a born again Klingon.
I know.
But you first thought when I came in, I was like, where am I coming from? Why am I just walking in circles around the room? Did I just sort of
I guess, because you're fired up. You're so fired up. You're trying to talk her out of it. You're like, listen, what is it going to take? Do you want me to learn Klingon language? And I was thinking,
well, read the scrolls. We'll figure this out together. Now.
Yes.
But she's got candles burning. She's got some kind of like statue or some ceremonial kind of stuff in there.
She's going full Klingon right now, basically.
She's gone full Klingon. Yeah. She lays down in the surgical bed.
Yep.
The doctor says, you know, computer erect force field. So he's closing off this surgical area.
Yeah.
And they go through a bunch of steps of, you know, losing oxygen and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Basically recreating the ion storm circumstances. And she's basically, I think he says, you know, she's not breathing, but her brain is safe. It's not, she's not brain dead, but everything else is gone.
Yeah.
And Janeway looks at her very solemnly and says, Kapla, B'Elanna.
She does
at the very end. So off we go. That.
Yeah.
Off we go.
We're on the barge. And now she's wearing full on Klingon warrior armor.
Now,
clothing.
Yeah. Hold on. This is what I'm like, all right. If this was real before, then why was she in her Starfleet uniform before? And now all of a sudden she's magically done a costume change.
Yeah, it's a little confusing. It really is.
The costume switches. I didn't quite get.
Well, my feeling was
it's got to be a metaphor.
Yeah, it is a metaphor, because when she had her Starfleet uniform, this is again her rejecting her Klingon heritage, her background, rejecting her mother, fighting with her mother, fighting with everybody else, you know, and then boom. With her Klingon gear, it's sort of like, all right, I'm all in now. Yeah. I am all in. Well, partially all in, because this is the ruse that she's trying to play, in terms of trying to get her mom out of this. So she's going to somehow trick the barge.
She's
going to
tell the boss, I'm going to sacrifice myself for her, let her go. And then once he lets her go, he's going to have the doctor bring her back.
That's what it is. But I do find
How would the doctor know when to bring her back?
Oh, that's right. He wouldn't know. Look at you. You're like a sleuth today. You're
like,
you
is are, there some signal or something?
Yeah. You are very Sherlock Holmesy today, and you're pulling everything out of here.
There's a hole in the plan.
There is a hole. Yeah, there is. But as she, you know, as she materializes on the Barge of the Dead, she doesn't see her mom anywhere, so that she has to go below deck. She goes below deck and she finds her mother. Her mother thinks that she is one of the Hoshari and trying to lure her away. And she's like, no, it's me, mom. And then they start having the same argument they had 10 years ago, which is kind of ironic, but also interesting. And she and Maral.
But Torres does apologize, but Maral is like, doesn't want to believe her.
No.
Torres basically says, I want to perform the transference ceremony. Right. Like, I want to offer myself.
Yeah.
And then she says the doctor. Yeah. She says, then the doctor, my people are going to bring me back. The doctor will bring me back.
Right.
And Maral's really kind of pissed off. She's like, oh, you're trying to cheat your way through this.
This is not the way it works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mom doesn't want to cheat her way to Stovacor. She wants to do this. She's legit. And just then two guards come down, bring Torres up above. Torres tells up above the boss man.
Kortar.
Torres says, take me, let her go.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, you want to offer yourself? Okay. As soon as you go through the gates and you're in hell,
then I'll release your mom.
Then I'll release you. She's like, no, do it now.
Yeah.
And he goes, I know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, you thought you could
trick me.
Yeah. You're trying to trick me. And I know your whole plan. And then Torres says, no, really, I will die for my mother.
Yeah.
And it feels legit.
It does.
He says, okay, if you want to die, we can make that happen. You can trade with your mom. But if you decide to really do this, your friends aren't going to be able to save you. And I'm like, really? I could have told you that, because you didn't have a plan on how they were, when exactly they were going to pull you out. So no, your friends can't save you. They never could.
Because
you had a hole in your plan. Anyway, but she says she agrees to it. And suddenly the branding starts to fade on her mom and starts to come onto B'Elanna.
That's right.
Like one of the pieces of the branding.
Yeah, that keloid scar appears now on B'Elanna's face.
Mm-hmm. Once the branding is done, then Mom beams over to Stovacore.
Yeah, she's gone. And then I thought, all right, they're going to travel for a while. But no, they're already at the gates of Grethor, right there. They're like, ta-da, we're here.
As soon as she's gone, they're at the gates. And that was kind of a cool shot of feeling the shoreline kind of coming into frame.
Yeah, they lower the plank and B'Elanna is basically starting to walk the plank.
Starting to walk the plank. Did you see the dragon on the front of the boat?
I did. Yes. Yeah.
Do you remember if that was real or was that a VisFX? I can't remember. I feel like it was real.
I think it was
like real. Physical. Like they had actually created that dragon.
It was physical. Yeah, it was pretty physically cool. Real. It was cool. Yeah. It was cool. When she looks back, you know, Bakhtan is there with his he's holding the batleth. Like, don't you try to come back, is what he's doing. Yep. And then she looks back again. It's no longer the Klingon. It's now Tuvok holding the batleth. Yep. And he's like, don't you come back either. And basically, does he try to hit her? I think he does hit her, or he makes a move towards her. And then all of a sudden she's transported to sickbay. And now she's in the Klingon hell version of sickbay, where the doctor and Neelix are there to greet her. And they are creepy, creepy, and more creepy. And she walks out into the corridor with Neelix, who escorts her to the mess hall. And now all the main players are there, including the doctor who was in sickbay, but now magically transported to the mess hall. The same celebration that they had in the earlier dream is going on.
I did like when she says something like, you know, Voyager, this isn't hell to me. Like, why am I here? Yeah,
right.
And then Neelix says something like, oh, are you sure?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Were you ever happy on Voyager?
Yes.
That was an interesting little exchange.
Right.
Because it's true. She's often kind of, you know, she's displayed to most people like she doesn't want to be here, critical of Starfleet. And so I thought that was interesting. Like, do we create our own sort of hell kind of concept?
Definitely.
But we go into the dream mess hall.
Yeah.
Everybody's singing drinking songs.
Yeah.
Janeway makes a toast to B'Elanna's dishonor. Let's drink to her dishonor.
Do you remember that song?
No, I don't think Paris was singing it for some reason.
Oh, I had to sing it because the camera comes across me. And I think you had to sing it, too. I think we all had to learn it. And I just remember, looking at the script going, man, we have to learn another language for this scene. I don't think
I did sing it for some reason. And as the camera went by, Paris wasn't singing. And I thought it was really strange. Like, why isn't he singing? But maybe
I guess but I do remember the last word of that one phrase where they say "baitik," and I remember that word, just it's still in my memory. I was like, oh yeah, I do remember this. But back then I was not enthused that we had to sing
Klingon.
A song in Klingon. Now, because I'm so into languages now, I would be so stoked. I'd be like, yes, we get to sing Klingon. I would have been so excited.
During this toast, Janeway's insulting B'Elanna. Everyone's insulting her.
Everybody.
They're saying things like, you know, this is your fault. You keep everyone at arm's length.
Yeah.
You're stubborn, Seven says.
Yeah.
The doctor even insults her forehead.
Yes. Oh my God.
Just like your mother, especially that forehead.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah.
God, that's really nasty.
Yeah, he was mean.
Chakotay keeps saying, interpret the symbols. Tuvok comes in. He tosses is a batleth to her. He says, defend yourself.
I don't think he throws it at her. I think he picks it up and starts walking towards her and says, defend yourself.
Oh, he's threatening her. Yeah. Defend yourself.
She says, batlethless. Batlethless. Look at that.
We go into the barge and Morale is there, which confuses Torres because she thought, you know, she was like, didn't I leave you at Stovacore?
Yeah. And she's wearing Janeway's uniform.
She's wearing Janeway's uniform. Mm-hmm. Morale says that she can't be freed until Torres frees herself.
Yes.
From Grethor, which confuses Torres because she's like, I did everything right. Like, you know, it makes no sense.
Right. The rituals.
And her mom says, you never really truly understood.
Yeah.
So that's what Chakotay keeps saying. It's look at the symbols, look at the metaphors.
Right.
Like, it's not literal. Yeah. You know, you don't have to do everything right. You need to look at the deeper meaning.
Yeah. And the last thing that Morale says to B'Elanna before we cut out of the scene is she says, choose to live, B'Elanna. Choose to live.
Choose to live.
We have a quick cut to sick bay where they're still trying to resuscitate B'Elanna, but then we jump right back to the Barge of the Dead. And now all the main players are on the barge with her. Yep. It's the Doctor, it's Chakotay, it's you, it's me. We're all there.
Yeah, everybody's there. And Torres is like in the middle of this circle, and she's like, you know, really emotional. She's like screaming, begging everyone, like, what do you want? What do you want me to do? What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
And her mom's like, you don't need to do anything.
Yeah.
They don't want anything but for you to just be yourself.
Yes.
They also keep saying, defend yourself, defend yourself.
Right.
And finally, Torres says, I'm tired of fighting.
Yeah.
And she takes the batleth and she throws it.
Chucks it.
Out into the water.
Yeah.
And then she drops to her knees and her mom joins her. And that's like, she's gotten at the deep issue that this whole experience was for, which is, stop fighting. Stop fighting everyone. Stop fighting with yourself. Just accept. Like, let go of this fight and this anger and this trying to do things right. And just let go and relax a little. That's really the metaphor to me.
Yes, I agree. I wanted to see that batleth spinning through the air and landing and hitting that one Klingon earlier that jumped off the ship, or one of the sea serpents, something like that. We hear
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Making a sound.
But her mom gets down on her knees right with her. And she said, you've taken the first step in this journey.
Yep. Of your journey.
That we're going to meet again in Stovacor, or perhaps even when you get home. And then they hug. And as they hug, we cut back to sick bay and Torres is alive and she's awake.
Yeah.
And she wakes up. Yeah. She says, mother. And she sits up and she looks around. And
God, I'm alive. Yeah. She says that. And then she hugs Janeway.
Yeah. And she hugs her mother figure. Her boyfriend is standing right next to her, but she hugs her boss instead. That's all I'm going to say. That's why my limerick said, and I will read my limerick one more time.
Yeah.
In a shuttle, B'Elanna hit her head and woke up on the Barge of the Dead. Her boyfriend was Tom, but she had to save Mom. She survived and hugged Janeway instead.
I know. Look at that.
I was standing right there. Yeah. I had to come over in the middle of their very, you know, their very tender, intense hug. And I just put my hand awkwardly on her back. I was like, I guess I'm the boyfriend over here.
That's a little
it's okay. She was going through a lot. It was really a mother figure story, so I get it.
Oh my God. She's still thinking about Burke. That's where it is. That's what's going on.
I'm very insecure.
Yeah.
Tom's very insecure right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. The lesson.
Yeah, what's your lesson?
My lesson is, don't try and sacrifice who you truly are to make other people happy, to try to fix other people, or like, just be yourself.
Yeah.
She was trying to do all these things, thinking, oh, if I sacrifice my life, if I become a Klingon, if I do this, just be yourself.
Yeah.
Like, don't sacrifice who you truly are. If you don't want to fight, just stop fighting. You know, if the fight's not in you and it's not serving you anymore, stop it. So that's my lesson.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is what's most convenient for you. Care is being here when you need us. We're open evenings and weekends. Care is helping you save more. Most insurance plans and discount cards are accepted at your local Kroger Pharmacy. Care is saving you time by managing your prescriptions online. You can request refills, check order status, and more. Care is convenience that works for everyone. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Services and availability vary by location. Age and other restrictions may apply. For coverage, consult your health insurance company. Visit the pharmacy or our site for details.
What about you?
You know, I think when I watch this, I think about people that are called people pleasers. They're trying to make everyone else comfortable. They're trying to do everything so that everyone else is good. But guess what? They ignore themselves. I think it's really just a lesson in self-love and self-care, you know, in taking care of your own business. So
nice.
Okay. All right.
My rating for this episode, I will preface this by saying I liked this episode in some ways.
Yeah.
And I like some of the story, but overall, this episode didn't capture me. Like, it didn't.
No.
It was not one of my favorites, I'll be honest. And everybody did, people did nice work. It just, something about it was a little off to me. I'm going to give it a 6.2.
Ooh. Okay.
What about you?
I'm going to go higher than you. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to put it at 7.5. Okay. That's what I'm going to give it. I'm going to give it a little bit more.
So halfway between 6.2 and 7.5 would be around 6.9.
Yeah.
Ish, right?
Roughly. Let's see if we averaged out.
Yeah. 8.5. Mm-hmm. The Captain and Admiral's average rating for Barge of the Dead is 7.4.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Higher than close to you.
Closer to me. 0.1, yep. 0.1 less. So,
yeah.
Okay. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to this week's episode. And join us next week when Robbie and I will be tackling one of my favorite episodes that have nothing to do with Harry. Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy, clearly a huge Doctor episode. So,
yes.
Yeah. And then people always ask me, like, what's your favorite Harry episode? And I say, well, Timeless. What's your favorite non-Harry episode? I go, Tinker, Tenor, Doctor, Spy. So I always say
that. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
See you next week. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.